Hello and welcome to the Heavenly Chi podcast. You are listening to episode 81, and today we're speaking with Dr. Rosie Lathrops. Rosie is a bit of a specialist who has developed a reputation as a pain doctor. She works heavily with the lymphatic system, which is the topic of our conversation today. She has special interests in pediatrics, fertility, stress management, and detoxification. Welcome to the podcast, Rosie. It's lovely to have you on board.
Yay! So happy to be here as well. Thank you so much.
No problem. So tell us, how did you get into Chinese medicine? Because you have quite a diverse background going through dancing and a few other things, doing some environmental advocacy work and volunteering. What brought you to Chinese medicine? How did you get here?
It all started when I was about 15 years old. In the space of 4 years, we had 4 deaths in our family to cancer, which is quite heavy to dive straight into, but this is the truth. And during that period, we realized as a family that everyone went through something emotionally distressful or, you know, some type of ongoing acute stress period before they were all diagnosed. And it struck a lot of interest in our family as to why they got sick. And of course, just while these people in my family were trying to recover from cancer, they were trying all kinds of modalities, one including Chinese medicine at the time. Most of the people that passed away were too far gone, I would say, in that sense, to put it bluntly. But at that time, it started to become a discussion in our family. So we started looking into it more, and then it kind of got pushed aside. But what then happened is I went on with my dance career and I kept meeting people that did Chinese medicine. It was like a very strong indicator that, hey, maybe you need to look at this, Rosie. And I will never forget, there was a practitioner who ended up being one of my mentors for 5 years in South Melbourne. She fixed a hip injury that I had for 6 months as a professional dancer in one treatment, and I had been to a physio for 6 months. And I just thought, you know what, this is really, really cool. I need to look into how that even works. So all of those life experiences and all the traveling around the world I did with dancing pushed me towards it. But I think underneath all of that, there's naturally a desire to help people. And there's also a very strong passion for like truth and understanding around what really is at the root of why things happen in life and how they happen. So yeah, I'd say it's a combination.
Wow, that's super interesting. Really, really cool. I'm sorry that it was such a hard journey. That sounds, yeah, like not all of us have quite a kick like that. So I'm sorry that you went through that, but I'm glad that it seems to have brought you to a place where you seem to be really like fulfilling your calling, and you seem really passionate about what you do and, you know, the stuff that you put out there and the way that you engage with patients and focus on, you know, really getting them really good results and diving into those deeper layers is really, really admirable. How did you end up working, because you do a lot of work with the lymphatic system and with pain? How are those things connected for you? Because that's not, at least personally, when I think pain, I do think stagnation, but I don't necessarily think of the lymphatic system. How did you come to that? How did that come up?
So this is all what happened is about 3 years ago, I had this like unexplained breast pain, and someone recommended me to, I mean, unexplained from Western medicine. In Chinese medicine, we could, you know, identify the meridians and look at the patterns. So pretty much I was recommended through a friend of a friend to see this lady in Ivanhoe, who's comes from like a, I think it's a long line of different Chinese medicine practitioners. And she primarily works through lymphatic drainage, and she's from China herself and has like a whole family history of all these different methods. And she started doing this work on around my breast health and the lymph drainage. And I just started watching how she was doing it. And I was like, oh my God, like the results were so fast, you know, in combination with acupressure and all of our meridian type theory work as well. But I just found the combination of the two just worked incredibly well. And I think also it struck a passion for me to understand it further, because I had that own problem. By the way, that's all gone now, thanks to her. But and on my own work, but looking into it further made me want to understand prevention for breast health as well. And I naturally have an interest in women's health. So anything to do with breast health, breastfeeding, and just, I guess, our immune system and how that influences our breast health, that started that exploration into lymphatic more And then I obviously have, not obviously, but I have a background in massage. So that manual aspect with the inspiration of hers and all the other practitioners working together, I guess it just kind of pulled me to learn more. So I started applying some of these methods like thymus cupping and cupping in the armpits to drain all the system. And I found a really big acceleration in results, like much more than just some basic cupping on the back. So, and then I looked into, I was like, oh my God, like I had some antibodies with my thyroid and I was doing these treatments on myself and it just dropped within in about 3 months, my antibodies dropped in half and I was like, oh my God. And I guess just the combination of our modern lifestyle really changing, like we're dealing with things now in 2025 that we weren't dealing with, that people weren't dealing with when traditional Chinese medicine was, well, let's say a few thousand years ago, when that was really being explored in terms of chemicals and toxins and all those types of things coming into our system. And we know, as we know, the lymph system is what's our primary kind of drainage pathway. So it just felt like we should be looking into that a little bit more from this modern angle that we need to be taking with people as well, because I do think things are becoming a bit different in terms of like why diseases are happening and how they're happening. You know, does that make sense? Like, yeah, our modern lifestyle is like complicating conditions, I think, because we have all these extra factors coming into our body and all of these irritants. So, yeah. And when I also started looking into it more, I noticed how much more bright and vital my face would look. And right around this time, obviously, Gua Sha has been so trendy online, like with the beauty aspect. I don't think people even know what Gua Sha means, which is quite funny, but it's just gone so cool and trendy, and everyone's talking about the lymph system in the last 6 months to a year. So I'm glad to see that because that's really going to save a lot of people, or at least delay a lot of diseases onsetting. Now, yeah.
Wow, that's so awesome. And there's so much to unpack from that.
Yeah.
I don't even know where I want to start. Actually, I think I do. I think I want to dive more into this idea of cupping non-traditional areas of the body. I think that's something that's going to pique a lot of people's interest. Tell us a little bit more about, I guess we can all get a basic idea of, you know, where the lymphatic system goes and where the major parts are that we're working on. There's obviously lots of lymph nodes around the neck. There's lots of lymph nodes around the armpit area. There's lots of lymph nodes around the groin and the abdomen. Is this sort of where you focus with?
Yeah, so I've watched a lot by being treated for my breast condition. I watched this lady Jay do a lot, and because of her belief systems, I think she's a bit cautious around like so superstitions in Chinese culture around teaching certain things, right? So and like passing on knowledge. But I've really been trying to encourage her to like run some workshops or something like that, or maybe I could record her and turn it into a program or something, which I'm going to keep gently nudging her to do with me so that people can learn this. But pretty much because we have these kind of high pressure zones, or particularly around the chest and the armpits, if you create, just like with a pipe system, if you change a massive amount of pressure in that area, just like you're doing with cupping or needling, you're changing the pressure flow, boom, everything starts to just flush through really fast. So it's as simple as that. But I have had her cup particularly a lot through that thymus and right up into that collarbone area, which is an extremely intense area to be cupped firmly. But when she would cup it, if I had a couple of stress weeks or my immune system went down, it would come up like lumpy, like all the stuff which you've probably seen over the years with cupping itself. But particularly just the lymph, I had no idea like how much lymphatic congestion we're getting. And she would cup my right side where the breast health issue was, and there would be like these balls of lymph congestion just coming up underneath the skin, but you could feel it. It was
Underneath
unreal.
your armpit
Yeah, I
is
was
where
like,
you're pointing to
yeah, sorry.
for those playing along at home can't see where all of the pointing's happening. So there was cupping that was happening So around the thymus area, it looks like you're pointing to around sort of like REN 22
And
area.
right here as well. She would cut pretty much, oh, it feels like it's on your throat almost. It's quite an invasive personal thing. And then she would, she gets my arm up in different elbow positions. So she lifts my arm up and she cups really firm on the armpit. And what I find so interesting is I know everyone's teaching everyone that lymph system is just gentle stimulation, but personally, I don't find that effective enough in clinic to have very good results. I have people coming in with like triple their size, like lymphedema issues, and they walk out, their legs got almost gone half the size, but it requires quite firm stimulation of the lymph system. So I'm not saying that you have to press hard, but for really strong results, that's what's
Sometimes you need.
working.
And so if you do have people coming in with lymphedema that's quite prominent in their lower limbs, are you focusing on the groin area or the abdomen area? How does that differ to working with breast health?
So, I mean, of course, we do the Chinese medical pathology, right? So, a lot of the time it's the spleen and liver kind of imbalance, particularly spleen. So, we got to look at that. But in terms of the leg, I palpate the meridians and see which meridian's kind of looking the most unhappy. Spend a lot of time just manually draining that. And then I will work near the popliteal fossa at the back of the knee. I do cupping just above it, because there's a lot of pressure flow that builds up there, and I dig my fingers right into that knee crease as well, which I know a lot of people are pretty afraid to touch because it's got some vulnerable, your nerve and blood vessels and things. But if you've got an idea of what you're doing, you can push it, if you know your anatomy. So I do that, and I will cup on the inside of the knee where there's a collection of lymph nodes, and that's where a lot of meridians also run through there. So you're kind of stimulating the lymph and also the flow of the meridians at the same time. I don't know if I'm answering this question very well. So always check the main pathology and then treat the channel associated accordingly. And then I will either cup like right at the lymph nodes and the groin as well. But I find the most effective thing to do is to focus on the actual abdomen and organ system. And palpate, see which is dominant, which one's weak, and then spend some time needling, cupping, or acupressuring to help release or build up qi in that area. So I'm doing Chinese medicine. I'm just kind of adding in little bits of lymphatic support.
Yeah, your own flair.
Oh, I'm flair. Thanks to Jay's teachings.
That's so cool. I guess, on the topic of patterns, what are the most common Chinese medicine, like for those of us who are like kind of less familiar with the Western anatomical stuff or like Western pathology terms, what are the primary patterns, like Chinese medicine patterns you see presenting with? That people presenting with that would suggest that there's something going on with their lymphatic system.
This is what I mean though, right? In 2025, everyone's got congestion in their lymph system because of what we're being exposed to. So, like, pattern aside, Chinese medical pattern aside, everyone's going to have some type of, this is what I think, okay? I might be wrong, but I think everyone's got lymphatic congestion and lymph issues because we're all too stressed. We're all immunocompromised on some level, unless we're like perfectly non-stress and perfect diet, So there's that. Separate to that, we've got our Chinese medical patterns. And yes, there's always some component of liver stagnation because the liver yang and the liver force is what's pushing fluids around our body, right? So liver and spleen, I would say. But as we know, if the liver's becoming stressed over time, the kidneys can kind of over kind of kick in and try to help more. So I don't really know. I think primarily I'm seeing with women, liver, spleen with a bit of underlying maybe kidney yang, kidney deficiency. So like liver overacting spleen, that kind of pathology.
And do you see much difference in respect to like the location in someone's body where they have a lot of accumulation? Like, is there more different types of patterns with people that have more fluid accumulation in their head and the face versus people where it's exclusively in the legs, or where people have more like system-wide lymphedema.
100%. This goes so much further to we need to consider like medications. Like some people change their medications and they start getting a really puffy face, or they get really ill, or they've just had a surgery and they're inflamed because they're on steroids. So there's that component. And then you've got habitual lifestyle and how someone moves throughout the day and what their job is and how they're sitting or how they're exercising. These little quirks in our lifestyle can cause one side to stagnate more just by how we sit, how we sleep, and maybe we just have a really strong right arm. I don't know. We do something with work. For example, my right arm's my dominant arm when I'm treating people. So I will always have more. I need to be much more careful on my right breast health and my whole right side because I keep working that. And as you know, when you work your tendons and muscles, you can also create liver stagnation because you're using tendons, right? So you can kind of weaken the liver like that. So there's that to be mindful of. So yeah, it's like sneaky medications that people don't realize are really affecting people. And then that can show up in weird areas of the body, like unexplained puffiness of the face. And it's not that they've done something with their lifestyle. It's more of like a ongoing kind of response to medication use. I've just forgotten the question. Sorry, my mind's jumping. That's a little off now. What was the question?
Do you see different patterns that are more predominant if someone has their fluid retention or congestion in particular parts of the body? Like, would you see more, I don't know, would you see lung patterns with more fluid that's in the head? Would you see more kidney patterns if it's in the feet? So different patterns that you see when people have fluid sort of everywhere through the body.
I want to answer that simply, but I think everyone's, because of how deficient I think all of us, most of us are, I just feel like we're all a bit of everything, essentially. But I think everyone's got an element of like liver congestion, which isn't helping the severity of the fluid stagnation. And then I think the underlying cause of a lot of this fluid and lymphatic congestion that's happening is medication, toxins, sleep issues, and that spleen deficiency. And then some people have much further, like more severe long-term congested patterns because of kidney deficiency. So I think it's a little bit of everything. But as I said before, like what we're dealing with and what we study at university and traditionally, and like what we're dealing with in our modern life and how medicated people are, like I think it's like a whole other level that we're kind of needing to adapt to. So
I don't disagree. I think there's so much that we ask of our bodies by living in a modern world, and I think we really do underestimate the impact that such widespread, ubiquitous chemical exposure that we get even just by default living in a city. We're breathing in fumes, and then we're intentionally purchasing products to put on our bodies, to clean our houses with. There's products that are covering our furniture, well-meaning fire retardant chemicals that are everywhere throughout the world. Like, there's just thousands and thousands of chemicals that we really underplay the impact it has. And we do live in a very different world than the Chinese medicine texts are
That's
referring
right.
to, but we can still use the framework to
That's
help
right.
understand what's going on. It's so interesting. I'm reflecting on this. There's certain key phrases that have stuck with me that I've read in the Neijing or the Ling Shu, or have kind of picked up along the way. And one of those phrases is, "Don't needle into a place where there's swelling or fluid accumulation." Is that something that, like, if you're having patients coming in where they've got swelling, are you thinking first and foremost, okay, this person, I need to work on their lymphatics, and that's going to involve cupping, acupressure first? Or how are you thinking about that phrase, "don't needle into swelling or accumulations"?
When I look at a human body, I try to look at it as like one. I visualize when I'm looking at this body sitting there, right? I'm visualizing it as like a massive pipe system, and I look at it as a whole, and I try to almost like intuitively and logically use a bit of both, where what part of that pipe system I need to kind of nudge, so then I don't have to overdo it for the whole body. So I think that's dependent per person. I'm not afraid personally to get in there with swelling, but but also like if something's acutely injured, I don't necessarily want to aggravate that further. So there's discrepancies there. But no, usually with swelling, it's just stagnation. So to me, I'm not afraid to move it. But I wonder what in what context that book was kind of referring to, like all swellings. But like the way that I've been mentored is like literally just get in there and move it. That's the fastest results.
And always with needles,
Hands and needles.
hands and
Hands and
needles,
needles. Yeah,
and
and cups
cups,
sometimes. Yeah, a bit of everything.
and
But yeah.
Monster.
But yeah, if you know some of the pathways of the lymph system, which a lot of them that following a meridian anyway, that you can, if it's on the ankle, you can work up near the hip and try to look at it as a map, like as a big tube system. If I influence the hip, maybe the ankle will immediately go down and I don't have to poke the sore swollen area. So I do try to do that for patient comfort. But most of the time I find the fastest results are getting in there and moving that congestion so the body can heal it faster.
Yeah, that's great. I think, in context, in answer to your question, what book was it in?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't remember. I don't have the kind of memory that remembers these things. But it also, there's so many parts of our knowledge base that get handed down where I sometimes question, how did that instruction come about, or how did that piece of
Yeah,
advice
why?
come about? You know how sometimes, like a recipe gets handed down and they say, well, you've got to cut the bone in two, but that part of the recipe is so that it fits into the size pot that that person had access to. It actually is not part of what's required for the recipe. It's just like, well, I've got a small pot, so I just cut it in half. And people then think that cutting it in half is an important part
Yeah, that's
of the
right.
recipe. It may not have anything to do with
That's why
what's
a
actually going on.
little bit of logic, a little bit of intuition, a little bit of education. I think that's what's making something really effective. Just because it's all right knowing things, what you've read, not in your situation, but just in general. And then, but looking at a human body in front of you and just looking at it for what it is, and being like, all right. So the principle of something recovering is just removing the blockage, essentially. So, yeah, what's the
Yeah.
fastest way to do that per person?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I love that actually. It's very similar, a very similar philosophy to the one that I've used for the time that I've spent in massage as well. I actually remember my first day of training in that, and I'd already been studying Chinese medicine for a couple of years. And I remember doing this workshop, and they were just talking about stagnation is the source of pain. Go to the stagnation, clear the stagnation. And I remember thinking, wow, that sounds somewhat familiar. That's really interesting that that concept is there. And by following that philosophy, the style of massage that I was taught is incredibly effective. And we would get sim like all of us would get similar results to what you got. Going to see this mentor of yours after the physio. We would see people, we'd get people in who have spent, years sometimes bouncing between different professionals. And the amount of times I've heard, oh, no one's ever like gotten into that spot before, or
Yeah, no one's ever too
no
scared.
one's ever done
I
that. Like,
was like, oh.
this is what I've been asking for the last 5 years. Why hasn't anybody done this? It's quite remarkable. And I think it's quite a powerful thing when you have the combined knowledge. I think it's really important to also have to balance out our amazing Chinese medical philosophy and understanding of how things work on the inside, a really solid understanding of what you're working on, because there are nerves, there are blood vessels, there are lymph nodes, there are all of these different things below the surface. And I mean, that was the classic thing in a lot of my point location classes, particularly when we were doing things like the back shoe points, and they were like, you need to know what you're needling into and how you're needling it, because, you know, particularly with some of those points, that's how you cause pneumothorax. If you don't know what you're doing, and you don't know the body well enough, then you can do a lot of damage. And by the same virtue, having that really good understanding of and a clear picture of the networks that you're working with and what's actually going on physiologically as well, you can do some pretty crazy things, or things that look pretty crazy to the untrained eye, very safely. And you know when to stop and where to go. I'd love to know as well, because I've talked to a few people who, and I, this is something I'm kind of grappling with a little bit in my own practice too. A lot of those things like cupping and gua sha, I'm a big fan, but I do find it a little tricky sometimes to manage my time effectively when I'm doing a lot of these manual therapies. And I might have, like, on those blessed occasions when I have like a few back-to-back clients, oh, I really need to do some cupping and some gua sha and some electro for this person, and it's all, oh man, this other person, I was meant to have my next patient in 15 minutes ago. Like, how do you structure your days, and how do you manage your time with this?
I sometimes I leave 15 minutes based on in between people, based on needs, but I guess I just move real fast. There's no magic answer here. I just, you get good at realizing the right length of time, or how much you gua sha, or how long you keep that cup on, just to get that therapeutic response and then get on with the next thing. And a lot of the time when the cups are doing something, I'm doing something else on the leg or whatever. And I don't know, you just kind of, as the experience comes through for years, you get really good at discerning just the right amount to get a result. I'm not sure that's the most helpful answer for people listening.
No, but that's great. You get good. That makes a lot of sense.
We get good at it. I just leave more time for an initial, and I do spend almost a whole full hour per person. So I've structured my business very differently than some acupuncturists. So I charge more, and then I spend more time with people. I also like people to, because I also run a home practice, I have the luxury of kind of setting things the way that I need to. But that's what works for me. I like to just spend, I would rather charge more personally and then give someone like a phenomenal treatment where we could fix it in a couple of sessions, you know, instead of maybe four or five. But there's no right or wrong in that kind of structure. Mm. That's just what I've found really works for me and what makes me happy. Yeah. So I just kind of let people come in, do consult, little tongue pulse, talk about what's going on. They get on the table. Usually as they're talking, we're getting them on the table. I'll usually have a whole look at their posture and what's going on, have a look at their back, start off with some scraping and cupping if necessary. Most people it is, because we're all stagnant. And then I might, based on their issues, might start doing something on the leg, roll them over, and then I'm putting needles in while we're still chatting, and then they have a nap for 15, 20 minutes. So it's a bit go, go, go in the sessions.
For those people who, or those of us who kind of shy away from, like, or who have structured things in such a way that's like either less viable, or who are just like not so confident with cupping and gua sha, not so sure, like maybe not like super comfortable with, I mean, putting people in temporary pain to get that, because, you know, let's be fair, gua sha is not always the most, in particular, is not always the most pleasant experience. And it sounds like some of those cupping areas that you were talking about can be pretty intense as well. For those of us who tend to rely like more on needles, like, what do you think we're missing out on?
Well, from research, I've read that the effects of needles can be up to about 5 days systemically. I could be wrong there. From what I've last read about, like, the whole systemic effects chemically on the body and on the immune system, it can be a few days. But as we know, the effects of the immuno effects and the systemic effects of cupping and the microtrauma from cupping and gua sha could last longer as well. So you've got potentially some benefits there, but I'm not well read research wise on that, but that makes sense logically. So the whole time that that micro trauma is being repaired and the cells of a surplus of cell activity, chi and blood's going to repair that cupping mark or that gua sha, you have your body has gone into that more acute immune state. So it could be argued that maybe you're getting some more long-term benefits there than maybe just needles alone. I think this is a bigger topic because some people psychologically feel better that they're getting a manual therapy. It depends on the type of client, it depends on the type of issue. So you've got that you're dealing with. And as we know, the psychological state of the client and the emotional state is a huge part of their ability to get a result, and how much they trust you and what their previous bias is with treatment. So if you're working with someone who's like, I need this, then giving that could really help them, based on your discretion and safety. But yeah, there's the psychological state of the person. Then there's what, I mean, I know I could treat most issues just with needles alone as well. But I think, as I said previously, due to the nature of 2025, chemical exposure, all those things I just banged on about, and how we've all got blood stagnation pretty much at some time going on, like something stagnating somewhere because of our lifestyle, I do think most people are going to benefit from that extra nudge on their blood stagnation.
In line with what you've just said, the level of stagnation and the level of someone's need to have their lymphatic system moved is probably going to match with the level of emotional, with their emotional state. And the
Totally.
more you can affect change at that physical level, that's going to create the space for them to have more space within their, they'll have more space to feel comfort and ease and peace within their emotional world and their mental world.
Yeah, that's right. So, again, there's no right or wrong. I just think I'm speaking from my life experience, and that the results are really fast when I combine them. So, but I also was mentored off a lady in South Melbourne, Trish Stockley, who was trained to do a very strong combination of the both. So it's kind of what I've learned, and I love that. I also love the just you can feel the cycle. It's very psychological for people, I think, just when they roll over and they've just had that done, like they just drop into their body. I don't think there's one right or wrong. That's all I'm saying. I just think, yeah.
Is there ever a scenario where a patient would come in and you think, I'm not going to work on their lymphatic system?
Yeah, so sometimes I will primarily focus on like gua sha and cupping. I don't think that is affecting the lymph system, but it's not doing targeted lymphatic cupping or whatever on high pressure zones in the lymph system. But yes, and some people are extremely deficient and in a very acute emotional state, maybe they come in crying or something like that. I won't use conditions like this or someone who's just had breast cancer surgery or whatever, something's happened or radiation. Some people are very hesitant for you to be working in these kind of personal areas. So I'll focus more on some back work and just like some body acupuncture based on their pathology. Most of the time for colds and flus and children, I do a lot of lymphatic drainage on them for tonsils issues, emotional disorders. Like most of the time kids are eating crap food. So draining their lymph system is going to just clean up all of that. So, like babies, children, and teenagers, probably more having a chat to them and talking about their lifestyle, not just lymph drainage. But yeah, I find it's really easy to do on kids with the pediatric massage as well. Yeah, it's good fun.
Nice.
Yeah, and
Awesome.
you give out a lot of like home gua sha and home cupping, I believe. Or you teach parents how to do it for their children, for
I
example.
do. If they're very serious about it, I will. Because some people, like, they don't listen properly, if I'm being honest with you, and then they're not gonna. But if I know that they're really serious about like helping, then I will spend time and it's a bit blunt to say, but because I don't want them going hurting their kid or hurting their partner or something. So yeah, I'm pretty discerning about that now.
Yeah, great. Because I was going to ask, how do you teach them and how do you get them to comply?
I
Because
Acupressure, you'd be surprised. So many people, their kids are tucking their kids into bed, and I show them some little pediatric techniques or some really basic things on the feet and the liver, just especially kids with like skin issues, they just need constant stimulation of their liver meridian and the lymph system just to clean, get the aggravation down. But yeah, a lot of parents are pretty, if you make it simple, I usually give them one or two things, and that's enough. Just one or two little techniques, and I say just do it for twice a day, like one minute. Very simple. Then you will have very good compliance. Is that
It's a funny word, isn't it?
the word?
I wonder if we can do a little side quest on talking about compliance. I find it's such a tricky term because, or it's a sneaky term because we're implying that we are telling our patients what to do, and if they're naughty and don't comply with our demands, that there's some kind of failure on the patient's behalf when, I don't know, I kind of view it sometimes as a failure on the practitioner's behalf in giving an inappropriate prescription.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about that?
Well, I've personally never used the word compliance to a client. I just said it then, but what do you think, Jack?
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't word it as compliance to a patient. But I tend to agree with you, Claire. When I was first starting out and working with people, I think I could would look at it a little bit more as, oh, why is this person not doing, why doesn't this person want to help themselves? Why don't they, they've come to me for help and I've told them how they can do it, and why aren't they buying in? And I don't know, I find that quite accusatory, which I don't really like. I don't think that is very beneficial to the relationship that I have with my patients. And also, I find it quite disempowering for myself. So, and I extend this to herbs and other lifestyle recommendations that I might make, because I like to talk to people all about diet and other different lifestyle components as well, because I think a lot of the change. And I explain the way I explain it to people when they come to work with me is that, I see them for an hour and they've got 143 hours to undo it, and so it's on me to explain it and give them things in a way that is actually useful for them. And this is my, I guess this is why I very rarely will prescribe someone something like congee, which I know is amazing and really good for you. And I also don't see very many people who have ever made or eaten it before. And so if I'm telling them, oh, you need to completely change your whole dietary regime and make all of this stuff with all of these flavors that you're unfamiliar with unfamiliar techniques, it's just a little bit of a step too far. And what I think happens a lot of the time is that basically, I overwhelm them with too much information, and they're like, great, I'm just not going to do any of it. It's all too much, and so I'm just going to throw it all away. What I've tend to do more these days is pace people's experience a little bit more gently, gauge a little bit more of what they're looking for and what they're interested in, and then tailor the way that I present it and the way that I explain it in a way that connects with them and connects with their results, or the results that they're looking for, the outcomes that they're hoping to experience. And that seems to work a lot better. I guess I just spend a little bit more time on it as well, really building a picture for them. Like, yeah, when you do this, this is what's happening and this is how that works. And yeah, also just checking if they actually want to do it. Particularly with herbs, if you don't
Yeah.
want to take herbs, just tell me, because they're not going to do you any good on your shelf. You can't just osmosis them into your body. That's not how it works. And it will speed up the progress that we can make together quite dramatically if you take them. But if you don't want to, and it's just in the too hard basket for you, or you don't like the taste, we can work together for an extra 3 to 6 months. It's just that's I just lay the options out in as objective a way as I can, and let them make the decision.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And I think that when we are using the word compliance, it's mainly when we're talking to other practitioners about patients. I don't think I've ever used the word compliance with a patient, and I doubt that you guys have, and I doubt many of our listeners have, but I know that it's a word that comes up a lot in practitioner forums. It comes up a lot in practitioner training where we're talking about people being able to adhere to treatment recommendations. And yeah, it's just a curious, it's just an area of curiosity for me, just the language that we use and how it influences the way that we think about the work we do.
Yeah, I think I probably tend to think of it more as buy-in these days. But like buy-in on the fact that they can change and experience something different in their lives. Again, I wouldn't use buy-in with patients, but that's probably more the approach. I don't actually think I've thought of it as compliance in a very long time, not even internally. So
Yeah. I'm happy to get back on track now. Thanks for humoring my side quest. Hopefully, our listeners are still okay.
They're being compliant.
Guess on that note, Rosie, because I'm aware that you've got like quite a few different projects in the works. You're quite out there in the public eye and doing a lot of work. What are your plans for the future, and how do you? I know you do like a lot of patient education, and you offer a lot of free resources to people. What are you going for? What's your vision, and where do you see Chinese medicine going in, I guess, like particularly in this in like a Western context? What do you see as the role of Chinese medicine in the homes of everyday Australians?
I'm so excited you asked because probably pretty much any day soon, I'm launching something called Rejuven, which I've trademarked. I'm really excited. It's going to be an online portal for people to search up their health issues. And then when they put their, this is for the everyday person, not a Chinese medicine practitioner. So non-practitioner level understanding. You'll search up your health issues and there will be demonstrational videos of me teaching you how to do pressure points at home, safe herbs you can take. Recipes and research that I've linked in there as well. So pretty much I've just trying to, not trying to, I have created that. I've just got to film a few more things and it's going to be live. So and then maybe one day I was talking to someone about creating it into an app, but there's that's not as easy as we think it is. If you want to create your own, not just like white label something that's already pre-existing, that's a bit easier, but quite expensive. But yeah, so that's something, that's what I'm, one of the reasons I'm doing all this, obviously, other than just to help people, you know, because I get tired of people just being like, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, I didn't know that. And I'm just like, well, I need that. Here you go. So just learn, bloody learn. And I am also getting really tired. Tired is probably not the best phrase, concerned about how many people are getting sick. It is unbelievable how many people are ending up with cancer and how many people are just suddenly sick, which is not sudden really, this stuff going on. So we have to be doing preventative care all the time. That's what my belief is. I really do think so, because if we don't, look what's happening to all these people we love. I just don't think it's acceptable in my eyes. I know it's just happening and I need to accept it, but the other part of me is also like, God damn. We need to be helping each other more. So that's probably one of the primary reasons that's inspiring me with the education. I just want to help people. People are pretty desperate for help. I know desperate sounds intense, but I think people are, like, spiritually, emotionally, and physically. They're all looking for answers. When you really listen to people, we will hear that. Like a lot of people, they come in for a problem, but they keep seeing me because we have chats about life and direction and, soul evolution. Like we're all kind of, or maybe that's what I attract, but depending on, a lot of people are really interested in that. They're just needing the right person to show them what's possible. So that's something that I'm creating and wanting to do for people. So within that portal, I will have a directory of, for example, if I'm down Bayside in Melbourne. So if you're in this area, it would be like if you're in the suburb, this practitioner specializes in this, you can see them here. So it's pretty much like a one-stop shop on how you can kind of find people. That's what I want to do as well. Because there's another issue, is just trying to find the right person to help you. Like, how many people do you know? Just it took me 6 years to find someone that could. Like, why? We're all just suffering. Like, damn. So other than that, I have thought about opening up a team one day, like, because I work for myself right now, but I think the educational stuff is is pulling me right now. So I'm following that gut feeling. Thanks for asking, Jack.
And you mentioned as well, potentially not just providing education for the public and your patients, but also maybe providing some education for practitioners.
I'm slowly, I don't know if she's listening. She probably won't listen to this, but I'm slowly convincing a couple of people that have taught me things to run some events, or like I could film the expertise and then pop it in a separate portal and then just go, here you go, like learn. So, but I don't know about doing something just on my own. I know my level of knowledge. To me, I just look at myself and go, oh my God, I've got so much to know. But I, in terms of helping other practitioners, like I'm not there. Maybe that's a limiting belief. But in terms of helping the general public, I'm like, I really think all of us should be doing content and helping people. And just, we've just got so much and we have no idea what we know as practitioners. Like the stuff we know is just absolutely gold. I just look at people being dismissed with just a medicated solution. And although there's a place for that, but we just know so much on how to help people. I think we should be just screaming it on top of a mountain, like this is solutions. Hello. Like that's me though. So
I agree. I agree. There's so much noise out there too. The wonderful world of Instagram. Anyone with an opinion and a mobile phone can create a lot of compelling content.
a lot of
It may or may not be correct. It may or may not be the most efficient, but there's voices out there, and we need to be out there too.
There are so many wellness influencers, and I've had some really interesting discussions with people because they're like, well, what's the problem with a wellness influencer? Like they're helping people. And I said, I get that, but at the same time, their content is like so perfect. And I've made a point of doing videos that aren't like perfect because I want people just, well, first of all, who's got the time? I mean, maybe one day I'll spend money on production and stuff, but secondly, like I don't want people feeling like I'm trying to sell them a perfect image or something. I want to sell them solutions and like information that's actually going to help them. So I'm purposely doing content that way. So if you are listening to this and you get worried about content and making it look perfect, people don't really care. They just want to hear how to solve their problem. And then you've got engagement. Like it's super simple. Just talk about problems and solutions. But then my point with the wellness influencers is they make it looking that they're selling you like an idea of something and like an emotional feeling, and they're so good at that. But then the quality of their program or something is arguably not that good or not good at getting a result. So just results, results.
Or maybe it's only good for getting results for a certain type of person that has a particular problem.
I don't know why people are. I do know, but I don't think people should be afraid to do content because when people look at you, they just want to know how to help themselves. They're not worried about what you look like, if it's perfect. Just talk about, if you're listening, just talk about your problem, talk about a solution. People will love it. And they also really appreciate you for spending time doing that. So you create a lot of like respect in that way and a lot of appreciation that I think is not, it's like the positive side of social media we don't talk about much. For like giving, like helping people, you're still helping online.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's such a tricky area that people run up against is this idea of prolific versus perfect.
I feel like we might have talked about that recently.
Yeah, we have.
Off the record, actually.
We have.
Prolific over perfect. Is that what you said? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was asking Claire for some advice recently. And she just leveled with me and said, done beats perfect. People need to know that you're there. Otherwise, how can they find you? And it's really good advice. I try and remind myself that as regularly as I can, because I definitely am the kind of person. Oh, no, I'm not the kind of person. I definitely have a tendency to try and over perfect things, particularly like my own ideas of nothing, like my own ideas of like things that I want to create. Actually was identified a pattern that I have played out many, many times, some relatively recently, of like hyperfixating on a really small part of a project and then not wanting to change anything about it. And so having to like change the whole project to match this one little part of the thing that I was doing, which is insane because then it is all lopsided and doesn't work because the focus is on like is less on like what I was trying to create and more on making sure that I'm preserving this one little bit of arguably something pretty menial. Like, I don't know, it might be like lining up my text just right, or like getting the background color the perfect shade, and then the text doesn't show properly on it. It's like, oh, well, can't just have to change something else. And it ends up looking, I don't know, it doesn't, the meaning behind what I was creating gets kind of lost in the micro details. And it also takes forever.
Yes, yeah.
It gets done at all.
Big picture perspective can help. Yeah. And removing ourselves out of the way, that's a really good expression I've learned in self-development courses. Like, so when you're treating, there's no jack, right? It's just about the person and the condition. And it's the same. What's really helped me with doing content is just like, there's no Rosie, it's about what I'm saying. So then there's nothing in the way to stop you from doing it, because it's just about the message, really. And I follow all these, or the solution or whatever. I follow all these people online that do like mediumship and stuff like that, and they just get on and talk. And I was like, oh my God, I just like how non-perfect their content is, and I gravitate towards that. And that was the sign, like, hey, I need to be that way myself, and then just throw things up there and. That's the way to do it for you, but for me. But yeah, we're kind of finding our own way. But yeah.
But it's worked so well for you. You've got an amazing following online. As your content's obviously very compelling for people. And so I think you're doing a great job of spreading the word.
Fantastic. Oh, it means a lot. Thank you. Just get myself. That's what my father always says to get yourself out the way, Rosie. Just do the thing. Because then, yeah, there's nothing in the way. So, yeah.
Salient advice,
Yes.
indeed.
Yeah, I really actually really love that as a metaphor for putting your message out there and creating content, like that being very similar to the process of being in the room with someone and letting the treatment flow through you.
Yeah.
Because I think that's something that certainly like most practitioners I've talked to can relate to. That you're like you're in the space with someone that's something that's talked about a lot in different like acupuncture texts, but also at school. Like when you're in the room with a patient and when you don't have a supervisor looking over your shoulder, you just go with the flow and you respond to the things, little things that the patient says, and you choose the points logically, like a combination of logically and intuitively, and you do what feels right, and then feel amazing, hopefully. And I think that's really, really helpful to recontextualize that into the idea of Yeah, creating content for people to consume as the and to you have to have as a resource as well, like viewing that as like an ex almost like at least the way I'm processing it at the moment, as like almost as an extension of the time that you have with them in the treatment room. I think that's super cool.
Sure. All I know is that people are not looking at us the way that we look at ourselves. And if you put out something, you'll attract a certain type of thing, a person back. For example, if I'm putting out content that is about talking about straight into solutions and problems, I'm not going to be attracting people that are going to just follow me for like the fashion I wear or the what I'm portraying my life looks like. It's more about learning. So whatever you want to put it, whatever you want to create, you've got to put that out there. And then the universe brings it back. So if you're a practitioner listening, then and you want more clients, or then you got to speak into helping them. You have to do that. You have to do that if you want to bring more of that. So, yeah, I think some people also get a bit rigid in that. Like you have to just give, and you'll get back tenfold. But at first, you just got to give, give. Well, that's what I think. That's what's worked. Give, 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 give. And also the best leaders I've noticed in other fields of business, because I have a lot of business passion behind me, is that they're really good at being there for people and being of service. Like they're the type of person that walks into a room and just want to help. Not necessarily everyone, but they will just kind of give. And you notice that people, very big names on social media, they're all about providing value online. And then because they position themselves as people who provide value, that funnels into whatever they're branding or whatever they're selling. So if you want to create a thriving practice and be busy and have wait lists, you need to be the type of person who is giving value all the time, because that will switch something in people's brains and they will know that that's what they're going to give when they engage with you. And then you just get better at fine-tuning and tuning what that value looks like and how you give it. And you'll figure that out as you go. But I just think people are really like, oh, I'll give this. Oh, I didn't get that back. Like people are so petty about it, to be blunt. They
I
shouldn't run.
agree.
I just think they shouldn't run. You shouldn't run a business if you're going to be like that. You have to have, yeah, thanks, Claire. You have to have a level of faith. Like there's a jumping point where you jump in and you're just suspending and like, holy shit, I don't know if I'm getting back what I'm putting back, which is what I actually did for years until my following really shot up. I was like so shy online, and there was like a wall with me, and then I just stopped giving a flying F and just started doing shit. And that's what's worked. So, also, guys, it shouldn't take more than 5, 10 minutes to like make a video. Yeah,
Yeah.
like what? Too much time trying to make things perfect. Like, what the fuck?
I love how you speak about the need to be generous. And it's almost, it sounds like you're in line with one of the things that I believe to be true is that when we have knowledge, when we have expertise, when we have information that we can share with other people, it's not our knowledge. Like, I don't own the knowledge that I have. You don't own the knowledge that you have. You're just a custodian of that knowledge. And it's the knowledge. It's not owned by anyone. And so we're just helping to allow the information and the knowledge to be shared amongst people, the information that would be there for them to know anyway, if they had their own curiosities and their own experiences that would lead them to discover it for themselves. But I feel that if we do have knowledge and experience and expertise, it's almost that we owe the community and our society a service to share it.
I agree with you. I know a lot of people probably won't fully, like they'll say they agree, but then their actions don't really align. So yeah, I'd probably, there's something like a lackness, like a lacking in them. That's why people are being that way, right? They're being like, they're hoarding, and then they're like also comparing. And I think if you're a practitioner and you're listening to this and you go, oh, Rosie does content, stop looking at what I do. Sure, have a quick look, whatever, but you should be asking yourself within yourself, like what it's going to make you happy and like how you want to show up, and then do it from there. Because I think a lot of people are talking themselves out of the content space because they're just looking, they're consuming everyone else's, and they're going, holy fuck. How are you going to get any inspiration from like yourself when you're just watching it? I actually stopped watching other people's content. I've removed a lot of people that I follow And then just did what I wanted. And with that conviction, it's attractive in that sense, I think, anyway. So stop trying to look what other acupuncturists are doing and speak about you. I mean, for God's sake, these practitioners, so many acupuncturists that are so smart and they're so good at their job and they don't want to tell people like what they can fix. It just blows my mind. Like, so stop watching everyone else, you know, and just ask yourself within yourself, create space in yourself, and then and lead from that, I really think. Anyway, I'm going a bit ranty,
Yeah.
but
And so how do you navigate the Chinese Medicine Registration Board advertising guidelines? Because we are told don't advertise that you can help people. Basically, there's a list of things that we can say we can treat, and then the rest of it is kind of off limits. And so some people follow that to the letter. Some people have found workarounds. Some people just go, I don't care about ARPRA. Where do you stand
No, I
with that?
definitely care. Like, I don't want to cause any issues, but all the content I'm doing is just I word it so that I help lower blood pressure, help do this because it is. So I'm not guaranteeing any result, and that's the point of difference, I think, with the standards that they want. They don't want to mislead the public, right? That if they do this, you're going to get this result. So I just word it carefully, which can be frustrating in a sense. Because I know certain things can fix, but I mean, I don't know if I'm missing something here, but I think that's okay within the guidelines. So, and also if you're looking at content, you're like, oh, I don't know what I can say. Speak less about like just acupuncture and results, maybe speak more about lifestyle and conditions and educate the condition. There's just so much within that. I mean, I think what I'm doing is okay. I mean, have I missed something, Claire?
I don't know. Have you been audited by ARPRA? I hope you don't ever go through that process. It's horrible.
I haven't, but
I had
yeah.
to delete 10 years of social media when I
What?
went through my audit. It was horrible, but that's in the past.
10 years of social media. Okay. But can I ask why? Like, was there something on there that.
There were things that they were pulling up from years prior, and they said you. And at the time, and maybe they have evolved since then. And I know that some people have gotten legal advice and support from lawyers to be able to have certain things on their websites. But at the time that I went through, they definitely said that you can't claim to treat anything other than there was a very short list that they weren't prepared to provide. And so I changed all of my website and all of everything that I spoke about to then be more about the patient experience and just speaking to people's conditions and talking about non-Chinese medicine things.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So, because I've gone through all the standards, like the rules and things, and they just, from my understanding, yeah, you just don't want to be promising results and saying that you're going to be getting something for someone. So,
Correct.
I
Yeah.
do trust that educating is safe. Yeah.
At the time, they even saying, may help can be useful for, they were all things that were not acceptable
Really?
at the time. But that was back in 2018. It's now 7 years later. And so maybe things have evolved. But yeah, fingers crossed. Nobody who's
I'll reach out.
listening has to go through
Yeah.
ARPRA advertising audit because it's not a pleasant experience.
I will reach out to them and clarify again. Maybe I have spoken to them already, but I'll ask again.
Well, I guess since we're on the topic of business and actual like kind of operations side of things, what are some of the key mindset and I guess like other back-end administrative skills or thought processes or strategies that you think have been most helpful for you building the practice that you have and that you're also like what things are you hoping to what skills are you working on to develop into the future to take you to the next level?
not first thing is not looking over my shoulder trying to be something that I was never designed to be. So a lot of people will never have a business that looks like their friends, and they're not meant to really either. So that's just gonna serve you a life of like suffering and liver stagnation, trying to be a certain way that you're not really wanting to be anyway. So I think the first thing is everyone and myself is like asking you who, what you want to show up like and what you actually want to do with your time and life, and then creating your business that way instead of doing what your friend's doing or what you're told to do. Like I have these wonderful business coaches, but a lot of sometimes they say stuff and I'm just like, that is just not landing with me. So you gotta have a sense of very strong sense of understanding for you and who you are in the world. Because if that feels really aligned, then I do think your business will thrive from that. Because I think people, yeah, I hope that's making sense. So yeah, not trying to be something you don't want to be, and structure your days and times with enough space for mental notes, breaks, and that you are okay as well. It's another big thing I've learned. So right now what I'm working on is just furthering my understanding in like the online space, techie things, videos, like content, education. So that's what I'm working on. And I'm also working on scalable systems for the launch of my online program. So that means like how people enter the world and how we can get more people into that. So that's what I'm working on, and I'm learning that off Steph and Tim with the Success School. They have like this business coaching program that I'm learning through, and they primarily help people who are coaches, but their systems and business knowledge is just it can be applied to any business. So, but honestly, I've paid for a lot of business coaching and been in so many courses over the years. I've done a lot of things that aren't I don't necessarily learn business off Chinese medicine people, because to me, the principles of business can be applied, they come from anywhere, and you can just apply them to your Chinese medicine business. But the things that have asked, like, actually helped me the most is doing a lot of sitting in myself and like almost meditating on what I want to be and how I want to be. So I just think that connection with yourself is what really radiates attractiveness as a practitioner. And then, of course, you've got to do our own study to make sure we're good at our skill. Does that answer your question, Jack? A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. And with your, I guess, just to reiterate the second part of it, what, especially since you're thinking about hiring people and possibly building out a practice in the future, what are the kind of skills and what's on the horizon for you? What are the next steps? Obviously, you've got this online program launched, and I recognize that's probably taking up a fair bit of mental space, but if you look over the hill and over the horizon, what do you imagine is on the other side of that for you?
Well, I am building something else around my online program, like product-wise, with one of my mentors. So that will be going on. But I'm not too sure how and if it is the right thing for me to do to open a practice. I'm getting a very like mixed signal in my body's response right now. So and I'm very like heart-led in my life. So I just kind of I'm listening to that. But if that was the case, I would just be getting a commercial space and wanting to work with people that have a very strong sense of personal development and want to educate and help people as well. So yeah, I would be opening up and wanting to find people that want to come work with me in that way. Yeah, but that's a very big question mark, which usually means I'm not supposed to know right now, or that's a no. So we'll see.
And do you have any other, for those of us who are not quite as far along the path as you, do you have any advice or suggestions or recommendations, course-wise or just lifestyle-wise or in any form, really, for those of us who are, kind of still forging ahead and not quite up to where you are yet, but are on well on our way?
I just think if you are very good in enrolling someone in the idea of that of their solution and their health is possible. Like we can poss if we do these things, there's a very high chance, not promising outcomes, of course, but just showing someone what's possible, you will engage and tap into that part of their mind that will want to work with you, and they'll keep coming back. So you have to also really, for people getting people through the door, you have to really be what you're doing as well, because you cannot fool people. You can fool people for a certain length of time. This is what I've been learning about. I'm not trying to fool people, but it's what I've been reading about lately. Like people can sniff through bullshit as well. So you need to be what you say you're being, because I think that's a big conflict that people are feeling as well with practitioners. Like if you're encouraging people to have good harmony in their life, but then you come in and you just talk about your drama as a practitioner, like I just think after a while, people sense that, and then they leave you because they're looking for something more. So you want to be really in depth with yourself, working on yourself all the time, not to be perfect, but doing active work on yourself and creating that space for yourself to evolve constantly with your clients. And they'll feel that, they'll sense that with you and want to be a part of that, because people aren't looking for the perfect practitioner, but they're looking for space, like someone who can hold space with them. And that means you got to hold space for yourself. So I've had a hit and miss experience with different practitioners who it's kind of like they're just a bit on autopilot. Not a lot. I've just had a few experiences. So that's been my observation. So you want to create that for yourself to attract people who, because we don't just want people through the door. We want really good quality experiences with our clients as well, and really good quality clients. And that quality is a reflection of yourself and where you're at in yourself. So if you're attracting people who are very flaky and all that kind of stuff, look at where you're creating that in your own life and shift that and allow something better to come in. That just takes a bit of time. What was the other thing we're going to talk about? If you want to learn more about content, technically I do have a course for sale. It's an MMR, sorry, MR. What is it called? There's an acronym for it. There's a course that I've purchased and I can resell that taught me all my digital marketing content. So you could buy that off me, but I'm not really promoting that at the moment. But I will eventually create something to help people with their social media. I know a couple of people are doing that online. It's just, I really encourage people to just learn how to do reels and ask yourself honestly within you how you want to be showing up. Otherwise, you're just going to be really overwhelmed watching everyone else's noise. So get clear in yourself. I just think the biggest thing in business after being a business owner for almost 9 to 10 years now is you have to be just really in love with respecting and loving yourself, and it just everything stems from that. Your relationships, how you engage with people, how you deal with that client who F's you around, you will just deal with things much more empowered, and you will everything will just kind of flood in much more aligned to you. But if you're wishy-washy and you're in a state of fear, just be careful what you're putting out there. I just think it can attract some not so ideal scenarios as a business owner. And also, don't be afraid to go slower. Like, so many people have told me I should be hiring a team, and like, I don't have to do anything really. Like, why do I have to do that when you ask yourself? Why, well, you don't have to do anything in life. So just I feel like I'm in a dead door, like pepping everyone up. Come on, guys. Like, we can do this. So,
I love it. You're
yeah.
so congruent with being your authentic self, and you have such a strong sense of identity, and you have a great set of boundaries. I think you're a fabulous role model for so many practitioners. Well done on all that you've achieved.
Wow, that's so lovely. Thank you. You also, to you both. I know, Jack, you've just graduated recently, right?
Very recently. I
Yeah.
graduated in August and I've been practicing for 6 months in about 8 days' time.
Like, if you sat with yourself and wrote down everything that matters to you and how you are and who Jack is, you would have everything on how you want to design your business from there. And then all you need is knowledge and specific skills, like technical things that you might need to apply, like some systems in place or how you get someone in tin or like copy and paste text message. Like that's systems. But in terms of your values, everyone needs to get clear on that. Because that's what's, is it the word emanating out?
I think Michelle said something very similar, actually. If your values are not, if you're not in, if you don't know what your values are, and you're not like really clear on where you're coming from, things have a, I think she described it as things will run away from you, like things will get out of hand pretty quickly.
Yeah, potentially, or you will also attract confusing scenarios. And look, if you're not clear, that's also really okay. It's because you're in a discovery phase, so you need to have a level of grace within yourself that I'm not really clear right now, and that I'm just discovering. So yeah, there's, but that's all. That's, as I said before, everything comes from self-respect and self-love. And if you are that, then you're going to attract people who are coming for help with their health, and they're more likely to be receptive. Because I think, as you were saying before, a lot of people, why won't they take the advice? It's because a lot of them aren't really ready to kind of love themselves in a way, for going, putting it simply. Yeah, they're not allowing it.
How would you support someone if you identified that they were in that space of not loving themselves or not allowing the love?
I don't try to tell them you need to love yourself. I do, I say that without saying that, in the sense of I be that pillar in myself. And then with the space that I'm creating for this dynamic that we're developing a relationship with someone, they're coming in and I'm creating this like this vacuum space that if you want to, it's right here if you're ready. So there's no hurry, there's no nothing that, 'cause that's what unconditionally, like loving someone is really like you. There's no agenda here. And if you're ready, you're more likely to have someone lean into that, unless, as opposed to trying to force something on someone, right? When there's space created, it creates like freedom and, oh, and then people go, oh, that's interesting. But I also am a little bit assertive with that. It's almost like a assertive firm, I'm firm with people. That's what I find really works. As in, I will say it directly. I said, what's stopping you from respecting your body? And then they're like, holy shit. Like, so I think there's a bit of space within that. Almost like if you were to parent a child, right? You want to be firm, but then also kind of create space for them to self-discover. It's a bit of a dance. It's a bit of a dance. But I don't think people appreciate if you're being condescending or trying to tell them you just need to love yourself. People already fucking know that. If they already knew that, they'd be doing it. Like if they knew how to, but for them to self-discover how, the space needs to be created and not forced down their throat. Does that make sense?
I love that you're coming from a place of unconditional love with your patients. It's such beautiful words. Such
That's
beautiful
true. It feels
words.
like a warm hug.
Yeah, it does.
I think that's what we're lacking a bit in our society, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today, Rosie. It's been an absolute delight to be speaking with you.
That's wonderful to hear. You also, both.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in once again. We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we'd love you to give us a 5-star rating if you loved the episode. It helps us, and it helps other people to be able to find us as well. We love all of your feedback. So anything that you have to let us know, please reach out. We love hearing from you. And until our next episode, bye for now.